one of the comments that kind of disturbed me out of all the comments, that I'm not swag. Who is swag? If I ain't swag, who is swag? If I ain't swag, who is swag? If I ain't swag, who is swag? Baby, who is?
This is your boy, The Voice, and you're listening to the voice of the DHL. Strap in. We got a good topic today as we review the Southwest Division. Whole lot of whack ass, cap ass, weak ass, hating ass, fake on the scene ass, fantasy analyst. Y'all acting really ungrateful. I'm elevating the bros. It's been about feeding this fantasy addiction. One of these days, man, I'm gonna get it, y'all. Just give me a chance. But let's get to what I do best. Talk about fantasy hoop. All right, so at the beginning of the podcast there, that was Coach Prime talking about or responding to Coach Eddie Robinson Jr., head coach of the Alabama State Hornets football team. And the two of them got into a little minor altercation after the game. And later in the press conference, Eddie Robinson called out Prime saying that he ain't really swag. You know what I'm saying? Eddie Robinson swag. He been there. He been about that life. You know, he an ASU alumni graduate. Made it to the NFL out the mud. But Prime only responded in a way that Prime could. And said, if I ain't swag, who is swag? So I know that's more football than a hoop. But this being the homie league and most of us coming from Southern University, I had to get a little swag shout out into the podcast. Because I've been watching a lot of HBCU football this year. I'm not really a college guy in general, but I said, let me go ahead. You know, they on TV now. Let me try to support these guys and show some love. So, you know, I happened to catch that game. But anyways, let's go ahead and get into fantasy hoop. Today, we're talking about the Southeast Division. That includes the Hawks, the Hornets, the Heat, the Magic, and the Wizards. Now, the Southeast Division was fairly competitive last season, with three of their teams, Miami, Atlanta, and Charlotte, all finishing with a 500-plus record. But we'll go ahead and start off with the Hawks, who finished 43-39, which landed them ninth in the standings, where they beat the Hornets and then Cleveland in the playoff tournament to make the playoffs, and then they just got their ass busted in the first round by the Heat. Now, the Hawks have been knew that without Trae Young on the floor, they're often sputters, but when Miami locked... locked them down, and man, that defense they put on Trae Young in the first round, it just put a spotlight on the issue that when Young goes to the bench, nothing is happening. And I mean, they just destroy Trae Young. He was only able to average 15.4 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, and 1.4 three-pointers made at 18% while shooting 32% from the field. And averaging more turnovers than assists because he averaged 6.2 turnovers and only 6 assists in that series. So it's no wonder why the Hawks, they decided to be aggressive in the offseason. And you look who's new to the team. We got DeJounte Murray, the Holiday brothers, Justin and Aaron, Trent Forrest, Frank Kaminsky, and their first round pick, AJ Griffin. Those are a lot of new names coming into the Hawks, but not a lot of incoming fantasy value. Where we're going to find the value on this team is with the classics, and that's starting with Trae Young. We all know what he does. For as bad as his playoff performance was, during the regular season when it counts the most for fantasy, he had a career high in percentages, shooting 46% from the field and 38% from deep and 90% from the line. Remember, this is the guy who said, and I quote, "It's the regular season. I'm not going to lie. It's a lot more boring than the playoffs. You got to find that motivation to play like the playoffs." And this quote wasn't even in February or something like where it's close to the All-Star break and people are starting to get a little burnt out on the season. This man said that in November, like he just make deep runs in the playoffs every year. He was tripping, but you know, that's okay. Because I think Trae Young, I think he's excited. you know, to play with his new backcourt mate in DeJounte Murray. And after being embarrassed in the playoffs, he should be coming into this season with much more focus and attention to detail during the regular season. Speaking of backcourt mates, DeJounte Murray is someone that still should be high on everybody's draft board. Yes, Murray will take a step back playing with Young, but he's not going to revert back to that guy back in San Antonio who played alongside DeMar DeRozan and averaged 15 points. The Spicy Mustard, he's a much better player than he was two seasons ago. And I think this scenario will play out a little bit more like when Russell Westbrook went to play with James Harden in Houston. Yeah, the rebounds and assists, they may take a dip, but Murray should easily provide second round value with averages close to 20 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 1.5 steals, and 1.5 three-pointers made. What you got to remember is Murray was brought in specifically to help carry the offense when Trey's off the floor. So in competitive games, there will never be a moment where Ice Trey and Spicy Mustard are on the bench together. So you're looking at 14 to 16 minutes a night where DeJounte gets to run the show. John Collins is the next most fantasy-friendly guy on this team. And even though it seems that at every opportunity the Hawks are like trying to trade him, he's still on the team for right now. The funny thing is, there are rumors that recently came out that the Hawks are interested in Jay Crowder. And of course, once again, who's getting lumped into those trade scenarios? It's John the Baptist Collins. But to repeat myself, right now, he is a Atlanta Hawk. But unfortunately for fantasy, I think he's one of the guys that will get hurt most by Murray's presence. You look at Collins' stats, and over the last two seasons, his points per game have dropped, going from 21.6 to 17.6, and then from 17.6 to 16.2 a game. And that drop happened when Collins was basically fighting to be the second option with guys like DeAndre Hunter and Bogdan Bogdanovic. Now, in this current situation, at best he's a third option on offense, and he's still in competition for shots with DeAndre and Bogdan. On top of that, with Capella on the floor, his rebounds have dropped also, and Murray's not going to make that situation any easier. Clint Capella, for him, even in limited minutes, he's still a double-double guy. Last season, even after Onyeka Okongwu got healthy in January, Capella's minutes, it dropped from 30 to 26 a night. But again, even in that reduced role, in those 40 games where he shared the court with Okongwu, he shared minutes. They didn't really play together. But in that time, he averaged 10.7 points, 10.8 rebounds, and one block. There's no denying that the Hawks are trying to find a way to put Okongwu on the floor. But even in a minute share, Capella's value remains constant. You keep moving down the Hawks bench, you're looking at guys like Onyeka Okongwu, DeAndre Hunter, Bogdan Bogdanovic. They're all guys that should provide fantasy value, but I'm not sure if they're really must roster guys. As we discussed, Okongwu will be in a timeshare with Clint Capella, and even though he's the Hawks' center of the future, I just don't think he'll be able to usurp Capella this season. But we can still find room for improvement in his game if he can find a few more minutes. Last season, he averaged 21 minutes a night, but in the 11 games that he played 24 plus minutes, he averaged 11.4 points, 8.2 rebounds, and 1.6 blocks. So if you believe in Okongwu, you're looking for a minute split straight down the middle with him and Capella. DeAndre Hunter, this guy, he continues to tease us with his fantasy potential. Two seasons ago, Hunter looked poised to break out. He was averaging 15 points, 4.8 rebounds, and 1.3 three-pointers made at 33% before having complications with his right knee. Last season, that was a little bit lackluster, but in the final game of the season, he left us with a nice image of what his potential could be. He dropped 35 points in that playoff game trying to keep the Hawks postseason alive. And he had a really good series, actually, against Miami. He was averaging 21.2 points, 3.8 rebounds, and 2.4 three-pointers made at 46%. The issue, though, is even when Hunter's performing, there's no peripheral stats. He's not a good rebounder. There's no assists, really. There's no blocks, no steals. It's below average. He's not even getting like a full steal a game. So if Hunter's not scoring, he's not really contributing to your fantasy team. I do like Bogdan Bogdanovic for better fantasy value than Hunter. He's going to provide you a few assists. He's averaged at least a full steal over the past four seasons. But his role last season was to provide that spark off the bench when Trae Young sat. Now, again, with Murray on the floor, I think he's going to lose some of those opportunities because I really expect Murray to carry that team when Trae Young goes to the bench. Still, though, I think I would take a late-round flyer on Bogdan out of any of these guys in the late rounds. He seems to have the most upside. And unlike Okongwu, he's not in a position battle with Capella. Because again, that's a battle that we need to keep our eyes on to see what's going to happen throughout the season. If Capella minutes drop, Okongwu's goes up. If Okongwu takes the starting role, I don't think that's going to happen this season. I know they want him to play, but it could be possible where Capella just gets that honorary start and then he's only playing, you know, 20 minutes a night, and then you got Okongwu playing 26, 20, 28 minutes a night. So we got to really pay attention to what's going on there to kind of capitalize on that fantasy value. I don't think it changes your draft strategy, but is there something to pay attention to? On to my biggest bust and possible breakout players. And for this, I'm using the player's ADP, their average draft position, to discuss this. So unfortunately, as much as I like him, I have to go with John Collins as my bust. He's currently being drafted around pick 59, and in a 14-team league, that's round 5. As I stated before, Murray's going to eat into Collins' rebounds, plus he's already a sporadic scorer at best. So you look through his game log last season, he had 11 out of the 54 games that he scored less than 10 points. And I know that doesn't sound like a big number, only 11 games, but that's 20% of the games he played that he basically just shat the bed and didn't produce for his fantasy managers. So realistically, let's say his points continue to drop, because as I said before, over the last two seasons, his points average has dropped each season. So this season, now if he drops from 16.2 points to somewhere around 14.5, 15, and he's only averaging 6.5 rebounds, I almost rather take a flyer on a guy like Marvin Bagley, who's getting drafted around pick 137, and that's, you know, the 10th round. That's 5 rounds later. So you're getting much better value on a guy like Bagley than spending a high 5th round pick on John Collins. Possible breakout. I got to say Bogdan Bogdanovic. Currently, he's being drafted at pick 138. And there's a path for him to excel and kind of break into that top 100 of players, being really the only shooter left on the team now besides Trae Young. I think the question we want to ask ourselves is, can he get to a Desmond Bane level, who currently is being drafted at pick 51? And if you compare the two players, Bane averaged 18.2 points, 4.4 rebounds, 2.7 assists, 1.4 steals, and 3 three-pointers made at 44%, while Bogdanovic averaged 15.1 points, 4 rebounds, 3.1 assists, 1.1 steals, and 2.7 three-pointers made at 37%. So he's not that far off already, but let's say there's a possibility that with Murray at the helm of the second unit, Bogdanovic gets more wide-open shots. There's a chance that his points per game can bump up, and he might get close to 3 three-pointers made a night, which would make him almost equivalent to what Bane was doing last season. Taking a look at the Charlotte Hornets, who finished 43-39, which landed them 10th in the standings. And this was their second season of getting immediately booted from the play-in. That may be part of the reason why they let go of Coach James Borrego and brought in Steve Clifford. And of course, the biggest news, with its resolution yet to be determined, is the alleged abuse charges against Miles Bridges that the court system will currently have to play out. The last I heard was that his $7.9 million qualifying offer had expired, and that doesn't really mean much except that Miles Bridges won't be collecting any checks while he's dealing with this issue. But he's still a restricted free agent, and Charlotte would have the ability to match any offer that he got on the open market. That being said, the Hornets roster hasn't changed much. The only new guy on the team is rookie center Mark Williams. He's the younger brother of WNBA Washington Mystics center Elizabeth Williams. So hype runs in the family. The fantasy value on this team starts with point guard LaMelo Ball. I'm high on this guy, and I believe he's in line to take another huge leap. Now, unfortunately, we'll probably have to wait a bit to see LaMelo and what he has in store for us this season, because he suffered a grade 2 sprained ankle during his preseason game. Google tells me that the average time frame missed is about 19 days for that injury, and that would bring him back around October 28th, which means he could miss his team's first 4 or 5 games. When you look at the schedule, Charlotte has a back-to-back on Friday, October 28th, and Saturday, October 29th. So worst-case scenario, his first game back is against Golden State, where he's chasing around Steph Curry and trying to fight through screens. Terry Rozier is a guy that should be in line for another strong season. And the main theme here with the Hornets is going to be that with Miles Bridges absent from the team, there's going to be a lot more opportunity for everybody. Terry's already out here jacking up shots, so that's not really going to change. His mindset's not going to change on the court. 2 years ago when Hayward came into town and was supposed to really help Charlotte become a respectable team, Terry's shot attempts went up from 14.9 to 16.4. And last season, while Miles Bridges had his breakout year and upped his shot attempts from 9.4 to 15.2, Scary Terry still found a way to keep his shot attempts at 16. I think this is interesting because LaMelo Ball, he's not a gunner in the same vein as a guy like Trae Young. He's much more of a table setter. And even though I do think LaMelo Ball will find a way to take on more of the offensive load, Terry's a guy already that doesn't really have a conscience and is a more natural fit to be this team's leading scorer. I can imagine a scenario where Scary Terry's getting up 20 shots this season. And I know this may sound like sacrilege, but he be the Walmart great value version of Devin Booker. Shout out bench warmers. You're looking at a guy that could easily average 22 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and 1 steal. And seriously, from the shooting guard position, this guy, his assists has risen each year. Just in the last 3 seasons, he averaged 4.1 assists. Season after that, 4.2. And then 4.5 respectively. Now LaMelo and Scary Terry are the only two guys off the Charlotte roster that I believe are a must roster guy for fantasy. The fringe rosterable players include Gordon Hayward, PJ Washington, Kelly Oubre, Mason Plumlee, and Mark Williams. And the more I look at it, Gordon Hayward and PJ Washington, they're the only two that I'd really probably take a late round flyer on. Hayward, he's never been the same since injuring himself in Boston, so you have to take in that injury history when you're considering drafting him. And yeah, anybody can get hurt in any given season, and you're only not a concern until you actually are a concern due to health issues. But Hayward, his history is too checkered to ignore. And that being said, and you'll probably hear me say this 1,000 times, in the new NBA, fantasy managers got to be happy if their star player is playing anywhere from 66 to 68 games. Load management and the analytics surrounding it and the long-term viability of the player is too important to franchises for them to ignore that the concept of rest is helpful to their guys. If you look at the top 50 players in fantasy and take their average games, you're looking at an average of 62.5. And again, this is the top 50 guys in fantasy. These are guys that you're counting on. Guys that you hope will take you to the promised land and win you a championship. These are guys that you probably drafted with one of your first 3 picks. So in relation to Hayward, if you get 50 to 55 games, you got to consider that a win. Because he's really just a less durable Harrison Barnes. And I get that Hayward, he's not a high upside guy. But the floor is so steady with solid percentages across the board. 46% from the field. 85% from the free throw line. 39% from deep. He gives you decent rebounds and enough assists so that it matters from the small forward position at 3.6. So of course we know the production is not an issue. The issue is how many games are you going to get out of him this season? PJ Washington, he's another good late round pick, and he should see more opportunity as he slides into that starting spot with Bridges out of the way. Plus, you got to factor he's going to see some minutes as the team's small ball five. So what can we expect this season? The way I look at it, 2 seasons ago, before Miles Bridges beat him out of his spot, PJ Washington started in 61 of the 64 games he played and averaged 12.9 points, 6.5 rebounds, 1.1 steals, 1.2 blocks, and 1.8 three-pointers made at 38%. That's a very useful guy at the back end of your roster. The position battle in Charlotte that we should watch out for is at that center position with Mason Plumlee and Mark Williams. My guess is that Plumlee, he's the starting center for like the first 20-25 games or so, and then Mark Williams will have a chance to overtake him in the depth chart. And I get that this line of thinking is a little irrational because Coach Steve Clifford has never shown the capacity to trust young players, especially rookies. And I can tell you that from experience. That's part of the reason that he basically walked out on my team, the Orlando Magic, because he was just unwilling to play the young guys, and management kind of made a mandate that they are ready to move on. So developing young guys while actively tanking is not in Clifford's vocabulary. And it's not that Charlotte's not going to try this year, but when you look at the East, it's just so stacked that you would assume that Clifford would give Williams a chance. And I understand that it's unlikely for Tiger to change his stripes, but we know what Plumlee is. And I would hope that management and Clifford would at some point after, I don't mind a rookie having to earn minutes, earn his spot. But you got to let him play, let him go out there and make mistakes so that way you can see if he could really be a true NBA player. So I'm putting Williams on my watch list. Worst case scenario, he's a guy that you could stream probably and get some blocks and a few rebounds. Looking at the ADP for Charlotte's players, it's kind of hard to find any disagreements. But I'm going to go ahead and contradict myself and say LaMelo has the most bust potential. And this is going to be a lukewarm take, so take it with a grain of salt. But as I've talked about it today and before on my Top 16 podcast, LaMelo has yet to become that uber aggressive guy on offense. And with the ADP of 11, it's possible that you can be a tad bit disappointed if he's your first pick when guys like Damian Lillard and Devin Booker are being drafted after him. Possible breakout candidate, I'm going with PJ Washington, currently being drafted at pick 99. That's round 7 in a 14-team league. I can see him moving into that top 75 if we see some improvement. I don't think it's obnoxious if I said PJ Washington averaged 15 points, 7 rebounds, a steal, a block, and 1.5 three-pointers made. That really wouldn't surprise anybody. So even though I wouldn't reach for PJ, it's not hard for me to believe that he outperforms his ADP. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break here. And when we get back, we'll talk about one of the Eastern Conference finalists, the Miami Heat. Welcome back, and let's get back into our Southwest Division preview. We're going to go ahead and pick up with the Miami Heat, who went 53-29. That record was good enough to finish at the top of the regular season standings, but they closed out the season in the Eastern Conference Championship game, Game 7, and Jimmy Butler almost walked out of that gym as a goddamn legend. But he missed the shot, and now we question why he didn't have the energy to drive to the basket. Over the offseason, though, there was no real additions to the Heat. They're all about their internal growth and using their G League team to find their gems. Their first round pick, Nikola Jovic, he'll probably be spending a lot of time with that G team in Sioux Falls with the Sky Force, taking time to improve his game and be able to contribute at the NBA level. But guys that we want to pay attention to this season, well, that starts with Jimmy Butler. Playoff Jimmy Butler and regular season Jimmy Butler, those are two separate animals. Because come playoffs, the scoring goes up. He actually attempts threes. He rebounds more aggressively, etc., etc. You know, Jimmy Butler is this a better player, a more dominant animal when it comes to playoff basketball game. But in the regular season, though, Jimmy Butler, he's no slouch either. The bulk of his value comes from the high free throw volume where he shoots 87% on 8 free throw attempts. The problem is it's been a while since we've seen Butler play at least 60 games. He's another guy that, you know, if you draft him, you have to take less chances in the rest of the draft because the track record shows that there's going to be an abundance of games missed if you pick Jimmy Butler. Bam Adebayo, he's going in the second round at pick 22, but I need to see some more from him this season. He started to become a bit of a cheat code for fantasy because in the 2019-20 season, he averaged 5.1 assists as a center. And then in the 2020-21 season, he averaged 5.4 assists. Last season, all of that cratered. He only averaged 3.4 assists and not even a full block. He averaged 0.8 blocks. And like Jimmy Butler, I'm looking for him to step up. Step up that scoring, step up that playmaking again, and take that pressure off Jimmy Butler's shoulders for the regular season. Right now, though, it looks like Tyler Hero is going to be the guy that gets slotted into that role to carry the offense. So, at the very least, I need Adebayo to raise those assists again and start getting some blocks. Or we might as well just draft a guy like Domantas Sabonis or Nikola Vucevic a round or two later, and you're getting more bang for your buck that way. Speaking of Tyler Hero, he just signed a major extension for $130 mil over 4 years. He's publicly stated that he wants to be a starter. Either way, though, Hero's going to need to provide offense for this team. He's kind of similar to Terry Rozier, but has less opportunity to just really boost that scoring up because he's playing with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, who are both basically 20-point scorers. The realistic improvement that you're probably looking for from Hero is to provide a full steal this season and then just show some consistency that last year wasn't a fluke, that this is who he is now as a player. Because what happened was we got a little excited with Tyler Hero when he got in the bubble and just thought he was going to go ahead and wreck shop. And he wasn't bad, but he just wasn't what he was in the bubble. So a year goes by, he breaks out, has this amazing season last year, and now we got to see that type of ability sticks with him. Kyle Lowry, I believe the hate's gone a little bit far on him. He's missed a lot of time last season due to personal reasons, but he still played 63 games. And, you know, spoiler alert, he's probably my breakout nominee. And I get Lowry is already an established player, so it's not really a breakout into the traditional sense, but the guy's ADP is at 104 at this point. And he just finished averaging 7.5 assists, 1.1 steals, and 2.3 three-pointers made at 38%. And again, even with all the personal issues, he's still played 63 games. And I just went over that when we're looking at players, if you get in 66 to 68 games, that's fair value for a guy that you draft. Anything extra is cool, but we shouldn't be expecting that in fantasy these days. Moving on to the fringe guys, I got Max Strus, Duncan Robinson, and Haywood Highsmith. Strus, he basically took Duncan Robinson's minutes last season. In the 16 games that he started last season, he averaged 16.1 points, 3.7 rebounds, 4.2 three-pointers made at 47%. And yes, you heard me correctly. Strus averaged 4.2 three-pointers made. And this is a good time to reference again that Tyler Hero does want to start. He just got paid a lot of money. It's possible that the Heat are saying, hey, you know, we gave you the money, so look, it doesn't matter if you start or not. You're going to get starter minutes. But, you know, you would assume with that type of money that Hero's voice is going to start to carry a little bit of weight in the organization. But even if that's the case, I'm not really worried if that happens because it seems that the stats are more correlated to the additional minutes rather than if Strus is able to start or not. In 26 games last season, where Max Strus played 27 minutes or more, He averaged 15.5 points, 4.1 rebounds, and 4 three-pointers made at 43%. The dude got that strap and he can shoot it, man. And just a little bit more context. Last season, Stephen Curry was the only player to average over 4 three-pointers made, and he averaged 4.5. So I know 26 games is not a full season, but to me, that's a big enough sample size to get him on my radar because he's in the echelon of Stephen Curry when it comes to this capturing that three-point category for you. Now, the Heat, they have an interesting position battle here on their hands due to TJ Tucker leaving for the offseason or leaving during the offseason to go play with Philly. And now there's a void here at the power forward position. And I'm looking at Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson, Haywood Haysmith. Those are all guys competing for minutes there. Now, Highsmith, he might be that next guy off the scrap heap that we're asking ourselves, where the heck did he come from? Because the Heat, they just continue to hit on guys that they develop in their system. Highsmith, he's a little undersized, standing at about 6'5", but he had a great summer league. And during that summer league, he averaged 13.7 points, 6 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 1.7 steals, 1 block, and 1.3 three-pointers made. And summer league's not the be-all, end-all, but it's nice to see that he had a good showing in the preseason. His tenacity on defense, that's what's really going to get him minutes. So, again, just somebody to keep an eye out for. Because if his efforts turn into playing time, maybe we're looking at a guy that gets 5.5, 6 rebounds, a steal, and 1.3 three-pointers made, which is basically what PJ Tucker was kind of doing at a little bit higher level. That makes him interesting. So, again, just a name to look out for. All right, breakouts and busts. Earlier, I said that Lowry was my nominee for a breakout candidate, but I think I've talked myself into changing that to Max Strus. If Strus could average close to 4 three-pointers made, he's probably like a top 50 player, top 75 at the least. So I like Max Strus as my breakout candidate now. My bust candidate, I'm going with Duncan Robinson. And I'm cheating here a bit because his ADP is already super low. He's sitting at pick 138, which is in the 10th round. But last season, he was almost unrosterable. You know, you could stream him in for threes because he was shooting 2.9 three-pointers made at 37%. But there's nothing else that he's contributing to. No rebounds, assists, steals, no blocks, no free throws. He's just knocking down threes. So that's not a guy that you want to keep on your squad long term. If you just want to cycle him in and out to kind of boost your 3 points made category, perfectly fine. But I wouldn't waste a draft pick on him. And the fact that he's kind of getting drafted seems a little absurd to me. So I'd wait just to see how the season starts out. You know, if he ends up winning the time at the power forward position and just be like kind of playing that stretch four. I know he's more of a shooting guard, but since he's so tall, they could use him as a stretch four. Hopefully over the offseason, he's been working on his defense, but that's somebody that you could just wait to grab him off the free agency if he's off to a hot start. The Orlando Magic, the team closest to my heart, my squad, they went 22-60 last season. And this is now going to be going into the third year of the full teardown. The worst record in the East last season secured them the number one pick in the draft, where they decided to select Paolo Banchero from Duke University. On a side note, the East is going to be interesting this year because there are really no teams that are actively tanking from the jump of this season. Detroit and Orlando, they should be bad just because their teams are filled with young players, but each of them have competent talent on the squad that you think that they would at least be competitive this year. Indiana, they have a history of never totally bottoming out. Plus, they still have to find somewhere to trade Buddy Hield and Miles Turner because if not, they're just too good. They're not going to lose enough games to be at the bottom of the standings. The same thing can go for the Washington Wizards, who have Bradley Beal and Kristaps Porzingis. Their floor is just too high. Anyway, I say all that to say is I could see Orlando winning 27-30 games just because of their feistiness. That feistiness starts with Franz Wagner. He had a good, really nice Euro basket showing this summer where he averaged 15.2 points, 4 rebounds, and 2.1 three-pointers made at 46% for Germany. Last season, he really took that shine from the 5th overall pick, Jalen Suggs, and was really the rookie near and dear to Orlando, to the hearts of Orlando Magic fans. As a big wing, he proved to have some playmaking ability with some solid handles. And in his second year, I'm hoping he could show some incremental growth across the stat sheet. Something like 18 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1 steal, and 2 three-pointers made doesn't seem too far-fetched for the second-year wing. Paolo Banchero, he's coming into this season with a lot of excitement. I see him as a Blake Griffin type, kind of after he lost some of the athleticism. He seems to have a good feel for the game, and it looks like the Magic are going to run a lot of sets where he initiates the offense. I'm thinking he'll average somewhere around 18 points, 8 rebounds, 3.5 assists, maybe give you a 3-ball. But it doesn't seem like he's a good steals or block guy just yet. And because Orlando will be like experimenting with them, playing him out of position at times. Think about like how they played Aaron Gordon at the 3 for so long, just trying to develop his handles for some more playmaking ability. I think we'll be looking at some of that experimentation with Paolo. And because of that, he's probably only going to shoot probably 44 to 46% from the field, which for a power forward, that's not really what you're looking for. You're probably looking for guys that shoot around 47% or better. Even if you're considered a floor spacer, you should be shooting enough in the paint to carry your field goal percentage to a respectable number. A guy that's comparable, not because of his style of play, but more because of the stats that he produced. You're looking at a guy like Kyle Kuzma that is statistically similar to what I believe Paolo will be this season. Wendell Carter Jr., he had a breakout season last year where he averaged his first double-double of his career, and he did that in under 30 minutes a night. I don't think he's going to see more minutes per se this season because Orlando did decide to re-sign Mo Bamba, and he's good enough that he probably commands at least 15 to 18 minutes on the floor. And then you think, okay, there's going to be times where, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of a game that Orlando plays a smallish lineup, you know, put 6'9" Franz out there at small forward, 6'6" Chuma Okeke at power forward, and then 6'10" Paolo at center. So without a lot of additional playing time in Carter's future, you got to hope that he's getting easier shots with improvement from Franz Wagner. And the fact that Paolo is probably going to command a lot of attention on offense, maybe that just makes things easier where you're getting little dump offs and things like that to Wendell Carter. If he can bump up his field goal percentage, which is already good, it's at 53%. But if he could bump that up to even 57, 58%, and then maybe put a little bit more effort into focusing on defense to become a rim protector, hone in on that where he's averaging about at least 1 full block, that's some improvement that I think is plausible. Fringe guys on this squad, I'm looking at Cole Anthony, Jalen Suggs, Markel Fultz, and Mo Bamba. With Cole Anthony, last season, he started off hot, man. That dude over 23 games averaged 19.9 points, 6.1 rebounds, 5.6 assists, and 2.8 three-pointers made at 37%. With Jalen Suggs injuring his knee in the preseason, he's expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. And again, I said earlier that I think Orlando wants their young guys to compete and be competitive this season, but they're not really worried about winning. You know, best case scenario, we go out and lose games by a margin of 5 every night. I think Orlando would be happy with that. The issue is, because they're not really too concerned with winning, you can give me the full 6 weeks before Jalen returns, and that would take you around November 19th and have him missing 16 games to the start of the season. Then you got Markel Fultz, who he fractured his big toe prior to training camp. Google told me that's another 4 to 6 week injury, and that means Fultz, he might not be back until November 8th, and that's about 11 games that he would miss if that was the case. So although I don't truly believe in Cole Anthony as a starter, I think he's better as that six-man spark plug off the bench. He's about to have at least a month runway to disclaim that starting job and ball out. As for potential position battles, it feels like this whole team is really battling for minutes. Orlando needs to invest in Suggs and see what they have if anything. They're going to have to figure out once Suggs, Fultz, and Cole, they're all healthy. They're going to have to see how they want to split those minutes. So that's going to be an interesting mix max of lineups as Orlando figure out who plays best with who. Then you look up at the backup big minutes. That's going to be a mess because there's this guy. I think his name is Jonathan Isaac, maybe? That's how you say it? Jonathan? But he's supposed to be playing basketball. He's a really good player. And I keep hearing whispers about how magnificent of a defender this guy is. You know what I'm saying? But seriously, you know, jokes aside, Jonathan Isaac, if it's not a myth that he plays this season, you got him, Chuma Okeke, Mo Bamba. They're all fighting for backup minutes. So Isaac, he's probably getting the most priority just because he's already been paid. And I'm sure the Magic want to see if he's somebody that's going to be a part of their future because of the potential that he's already shown. But, I mean, this guy, like, literally hasn't played for over 2 years. So I'm not sitting over here clenching my butt cheeks hoping that he falls to me in the draft because I just don't know when he's going to play this season or even if he's going to play. I mean, everybody's saying that, talking about they believe he's going to play this season, but he keeps having setback after setback, so I can't trust it. Looking at biggest busts, I'm going with Mo Bamba here. His average draft position is 105. That's round 8. I think this guy is going to be a streamer at best. I just don't see how minutes are going to be available to him with Paolo Banchero on the team now. Last season, Bamba actually played next to Wendell Carter. He really wasn't just a backup. They both were on the floor at the same time because Bamba started 69 games while Carter started 61. And if he's strictly a backup five like I think he's going to be, you're looking at 15 to 18 minutes a night. And that's not enough time for him to be relevant. If you look at the games where he played 20 minutes or less, he averaged 5.4 points, 4.9 rebounds, and 1.3 blocks. And that's just not enough to make him deserve to be drafted and be on somebody's roster long term. For potential breakout, I have Cole Anthony. And again, Anthony technically has already had his breakout season from last year, but his ADP is at pick 128, and that's in round 10. And he should be able to outperform that. You know, yes, it's possible that his long-term value isn't maintained, but coming out the gate, he's going to be a must-roster guy. Plus, realistically, will Fultz have a healthy season? Like, can we bank on that? I don't think so. So how much long-term value can Fultz really steal away from Cole Anthony? Same thing with Jalen Suggs. His rookie season was riddled with injuries, and he's starting off this season with another one. So he hasn't really just become an injury-prone guy just yet, but it could just be bad luck for Suggs. But at this point, neither Suggs or Fultz have proven that they are a durable option for the Orlando Magic. So that being said, Cole is really the most durable and best fantasy option out of the bunch. And we're almost down the stretch here, finishing up with the Washington Wizards, who went 35-47. Last season, they started off with good vibes as the Wizards went 10-3 in their first 13 games. But whatever the opposite of cream rising to the top is, that's what happened to the Wizards as they went 6-12 over the next 18 games. After not even making the play-in, Bradley Beal secured a $251 million 5-year extension, and the Wizards locked themselves into mediocrity. There's been a lot of turnover in DC as the Wizards try to retool because, as I referenced earlier, the Wizards aren't planning to tank this season. Their first priority is trying to make the playoffs unless everything goes totally off the rails. New to the team is Monte Morris, Will Barton, DeLon Wright, Taj Gibson, and the rookie, Taco Bell superstar, Johnny Davis. Of course, the first guy everybody wants off this team is the COVID king, Bradley Beal.
Coronavirus! Coronavirus! Shit is real!
I mean, seriously, how many times is this dude gonna catch COVID? Like, I get everybody catching COVID the first season back, you know, in 2020, 2021. Okay, everybody got it. That's cool. But the man missed out on the Olympics because he caught it again then. And then in the 2021-22 season, he was in the health and safety protocols twice. And now, right before the season starts again, he's in the health and safety protocols once more.
Come on, man. I mean, come on, man. Come on, man. You're making money. Come on. I mean, come on, man. Come on.
I mean, in all seriousness, I hope the dude's all right, but I mean, damn. He should have all the natural antibodies by now. I mean, this dude has caught every version of COVID that there's been. Anywho, last time we saw Bill, he was surging it down in February for wrist surgery, which explains why the shooting was probably so bad and why he shot a career low 30% from deep. But now with plenty of time to rest and the wrist being fixed, Bradley Bill should be back to his normal self. We look next at Kristaps Porzingis. He was traded in season to the Wizards from Dallas. And honestly, I didn't think he was going to suit up for the Wizards, but he played 17 out of the last 20 games. And he played in 3 of the last 4 back-to-backs. So not only did Porzingis play, he balled out, averaging 22.1 points, 8.8 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, and 1.7 three-pointers made at 37%. The question is, can Porzingis maintain that aggressive nature while playing alongside Bill? The answer to that should be yes, because for as terrible as Porzingis might have seemed in Dallas, for fantasy, the guy was good. In over 3 seasons with the Mavericks, he averaged 20 points, 8.8 rebounds, 1.7 blocks, and 2.1 three-pointers made at 35%. The thorn in Porzingis' side is, and you know, will always be health. Can he stay healthy? Kyle Kuzma, he ain't never seen a shot he ain't like. He's like the taller, younger version of Nick Young with confidence that lacks for nothing. What surprised me is how well Kuzma rebounded last season. You couple that with the 3.5 assists from the power forward's position, his value skyrocketed. And hopefully that well-roundedness is here to stay. The issue is, Kuzma only shared the court with Porzingis for 6 games before shutting it down after a knee injury. And in those 6 games, he averaged 6.7 rebounds. And that's a little bit closer to his career averages. But that went down from 8.8 rebounds that he was averaging before Porzingis entered the lineup. Next, you got Monty Morris. He came over from Denver. And this guy, I like him at the end of a fantasy bench. Last season, I think we probably saw his ceiling. He played in a decimated Denver team. And he was still only able to average 12.6 points, 4.4 assists, and 1.7 three-pointers made. I don't think he's coming over to Washington and bumping up his scoring average to 16 or so, but it is a little bit more probable that he can get up to 6 assists because now he's getting more opportunity to set up his teammates rather than having everything just run through Jokic. Yeah, you know, Bill's going to get a good amount of opportunity, but not the same way that Jokic was being used in Denver. So those assists should come a little bit more naturally from Monte Morris in Washington. Looking at some of the fringe players on this team, you got Will Barton, Rui Hachimura, and Daniel Gafford. Will Barton, he's probably should be upgraded a bit. He might not just be a fringe player. He's probably good enough to be a long-term guy that's on most teams' roster. Probably in the same ilk as Monte Morris. They're both just kind of nice end-of-the-bench guys. And him and Morris will probably be fighting over who's the fourth option on this team. I would project Barton to average about 12 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, and 1.5 three-pointers made. As for Rui and Gafford, those guys are people that you probably just want to put on your watch list. Rui, he missed about half of the season last year dealing with mental health and personal issues. And for fantasy, all he really provides is help and assistance in scoring and a little bit of rebounds. And he does neither of those well enough to really warrant any fantasy attention long term. Gafford, he's the one that truly interests me. He just needs minutes and he doesn't even really need a ton of minutes. In 30 games where Gafford averaged 26 minutes, he put up 11.9 points, 7.8 rebounds, and 1.8 blocks. Unfortunately, for him to get that value, that means Porzingis would have to get injured. That's not far-fetched. It's just not something that you want to bank on to be drafting a guy at the beginning of the season. The only position battle that I can think of is at the point guard position, well, the backup point guard position, and that's between DeLon Wright and Johnny Davis. The rookie, he wasn't really that good in summer league, and he hasn't really impressed or shined in preseason either. And again, the Wizards, they're trying to actively win. And if that's the case, coaches are more likely going to lean on their veterans to try to accomplish that goal. The biggest bust, that goes to Daniel Gafford, whose ADP is at 144, that's the 11th round. And really, a majority of guys being drafted in the last three rounds, they're not going to be on the roster long term anyway, so this isn't some type of egregious draft position here. But I really think the last round should be for guys with a little bit more high upside. Gafford does have upside, but that upside only comes if there's an injury. There's no simple way for him to just beat out the guy for the position. That spot belongs to Porzingis. It's unlikely that we see Gafford and Porzingis on the floor at the same time. And that's why I believe Gafford shouldn't even be drafted. Monte Morris at pick 117. He seems to have the most potential to break out. If somehow he upped his scoring, which again, I don't really think is going to happen. But if he did, plus he became above average in his assist production. So if he's getting you, you know, anywhere above six and a half assists, that's pretty much above average. And he can manage to keep his turnovers low, which is something he did in Denver as a starter. He could probably crack the top 100 and outperform his draft ranking. All right, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. I appreciate, as always, you guys spending some of your day with me. And if I get lucky, I'll go ahead and maybe knock out one last podcast before the draft. And again, that draft is on Sunday, October 16th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Okay, that's the pep talk. Let's go do basketball.